The sole survivor of a Yemeni air disaster is headed home. The same controller trainee is implicated in two runway incursions. And should NASA hand over low Earth orbits to the private sector? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, July 2, 2009. The lone known survivor of the crash of that Yemeni air flight in the Indian Ocean Tuesday is on her way home. First identified by officials on the scene as a 5-year-old boy, NBC News reported last night that Bahia Bakari is a 12-year-old girl, while the Associated Press still has her as a 14-year-old. NBC also reports that her physical injuries were limited to a broken collarbone and a few cuts and bruises. She reportedly spent 12 hours clinging to a piece of aircraft wreckage until search teams caught sight of her waving. She reported hearing voices around her in the early moments after the crash, but they all gradually fell silent. Her emotional trauma may be harder to gauge. Bahia has spoken by phone with her father, Kasim Bakari, in a suburb of Paris, and has been flown home now. Noting the trauma she's already been through, no one has yet told her that her mother, who was on the plane with her, has not been found. A white paper from members of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation has put forth a bold idea to the review of U.S. Human Spaceflight Plans Committee that NASA should work on the Moon and Mars and work with the private sector to serve low Earth orbit needs. The paper is titled Commercial Spaceflight in Low Earth Orbit is the Key to Affordable and Sustainable Exploration Beyond. It suggests that NASA can affordably and quickly enable the development of commercial spaceflight capabilities for both people and cargo to the International Space Station by making a series of careful, targeted investments. The premise is that to maximize benefits to NASA and the taxpayer, NASA should fund multiple fixed-price, milestone-based Space Act agreements for development of commercial crew capabilities, leveraging capital from the private sector. NASA has achieved notable bang for buck in recent years by seeding purses for private competitions. This could get interesting. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating two runway incursions at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport in Ohio. The most recent happened last Friday morning. ExpressJet Flight 2426 and Embraer 145 was cleared to cross runway 24 left at Taxiway Sierra in order to depart from runway 24 right. About 19 seconds later, the same controller cleared Commuter Flight 8717, a DH-8, for takeoff on runway 24 left. The ExpressJet flight crew saw the departing plane in time to tell the tower unable. They passed within 1,500 feet of each other. And then, back on the afternoon of June 3rd, a Boeing 737 was cleared to taxi into position on the same runway on which another E-145 was cleared for takeoff. The Embraer crew saw the Boeing, but the planes came within 500 feet of each other on runway 6 left. The same trainee controller issued the conflicting clearances in both cases. Sounds like somebody's in line to be separating Cessnas at Springfield. Up next on ANN, a special airworthiness information bulletin for Robinson Helicopters. The FAA says carbice accidents just keep on happening. And the Bell 429 gets its Canadian certification. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 2nd. I'm Paul Plack. Just in time for the peak season for summer heat in the Northern Hemisphere, the FAA has issued a special airworthiness information bulletin affecting Robinson Helicopter Company Model R-44-2 helicopters. Owners and operators are being alerted to the potential for fuel vapor in high ambient temperatures and altitudes. The bulletin stems from a report of an unexplained power loss in a new R-44 Raven 2 during its ferry flight from the factory in temps of about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The factory subsequently ran tests to 115 degrees and said the fuel system worked fine. The FAA's non-mandatory recommendation for operators is to be aware of the potential for fuel system vapor in high ambient temperatures. An intermittent or flickering auxiliary fuel pump warning light may be an early indication of vapor formation. If formation is suspected, FAA recommends decreasing altitude or discontinuing operations until cooler conditions exist. The FAA is also out with a special airworthiness information bulletin regarding carburetor icing. The FAA says there were 212 accidents attributed to carb ice between 1998 and 2007, and 13 of them were fatal. Despite certification requirements for a heated source of air on aircraft with carbs and industry educational efforts, the accident trend has remained fairly steady through the years. In case you're still laboring under the misconception that carb ice can't happen in hot weather, the FAA includes a chart in the bulletin which claims carb ice is possible in glide or cruise at temperatures up to 105 Fahrenheit with a 40-degree dew point spread. The agency suggests always checking carb heat during run-up and always using carb heat during descent and approach, or at any other time carb ice is possible. In earlier advisory circulars, the FAA has also cautioned to make turning the carb heat off part of the checklist for go-arounds, because you're going to want full takeoff power if that happens. Bell Helicopter says Transport Canada Civil Aviation has certified its newest light twin-engine helicopter, the Bell 429. The company says it's also completed FAA certification requirements. First deliveries are scheduled to begin this month. Bell Senior VP Bob Fitzpatrick sees a wide market for the 429. Quote, "Its design makes it adaptable for different market segments. Powered by two Pratt & Whitney Canada PW207D1 engines, the 429 has a phenomenally smooth ride and a power-to-weight ratio 20% greater than any helicopter in its class," unquote. The company says the 429, which involved customer advisory boards in its design phase, also offers 30% more cabin space than any other helicopter in its class, and has received over 300 letters of intent. The Bell sales team now works at turning those into firm orders. Still ahead, solar-powered flight gets closer. The Afghans have their Mi-35s back in the air, and the U.S. Navy trains its 30,000th helicopter pilot. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wasp GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wasp GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, July 2nd. I'm Paul Plack. If you think the rechargeable electric planes showing up at Oshkosh are groundbreaking, try this. A 3,500-pound airplane with a wingspan equal to a 747 and enough solar cells to not only fly all day, but produce enough excess power to recharge the batteries to allow flying all night. Bertrand Piccard and André Borschberg last week unveiled the Solar Impulse HBSIA at Dubendorf Airfield near Zurich, Switzerland. Starting in 2003, the pair, who were eventually joined by a team of 70 people, took the concept from idea to prototype in 6 years. First flight is expected by the end of 2009, and the first night flight is expected next year. Experience gained with this prototype will be applied to a B model, which will be designed for an around-the-world flight in 5 multi-day stages. The lithium polymer batteries weigh 880 pounds, and the 4 electric motors in the power plant develop a total of 40 horsepower. Thanks to some training provided by pilots from the Czech Republic, the Afghan National Army Air Corps now has Mi-35 attack helicopters back in its active inventory for the first time in nearly a decade. The Czech team began ground training and limited flight training for Afghan Mi-35 crew members last summer. In January, Afghan Mi-35 training increased greatly with the arrival of 6 refurbished helicopters. Since then, the Czech team has completed assessments on 9 pilots and added a more aggressive training program. The Mi-35 has enough range to conduct attack, air assault, or medevac missions anywhere in the country. Afghan Major General Daran, the Air Corps commander, calls the renewed capability good for the Afghan National Army and for the country of Afghanistan. And finally today, the U.S. Navy's Training Air Wing 5 celebrated a milestone June 19th when the 30,000th rotary wing student pilot walked across the stage to receive his coveted Wings of Gold. First Lieutenant Michael Brown of the U.S. Marine Corps says he realizes that being the milestone pilot was largely a matter of luck, but still, quote, "It's a great honor. It's a great testament to naval aviation. I'm really excited, and I hope I can do it justice," unquote. The total comes after more than 65 years of naval helicopter training, including all Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard helicopter pilots. Whoever ordered the plaque presented to Lieutenant Brown has a sense of humor. It reads, quote, "Through no great effort of your own, and by no selection means other than being near the top of the alphabet during your winging class, you are hereby selected as the 30,000th Rotary Wing Aviator. Congratulations! This number should be easy to remember." That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Frank Porter, CEO of Air Parts Sales Unlimited, provides details on the upcoming first deliveries of an engine experimenters have been anxiously awaiting, the 80-horsepower turbocharged HKS-700T. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.